And when he enters the Vrindavan forest, he plays with his friends. Instigated to kill the demon Dhanukasura and all his friends in the forest known as
Talavan,
which has nothing to do with Afghanistan and Talavan. Very different. But at the very end of that chapter, something very mysterious happens as well. There's two verses. But it is those two verses describe Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys coming home, because this is the first time they've gone out with the cows and entered the Vrindavan forest. And at the end of the chapter, they come home, and it describes it's in two verses, but in a very wonderful way, the exchange of glances that take place between the Braja Gopikas and Krishna. And that is the beginning of the Dwavarag of the Gopis. Of course, not the beginning of it, but it's the first expression in the Bhagavatam of the Dwavarag. And also at the end of that chapter, Dwavarag means the first, before meeting, the exchanges of love. And then in the next, at the end of the chapter, chapter 15, Krishna goes without Balaram to the Yamuna, and they drink the waters of the Yamuna. And then all the boys and all the cows, not Krishna, but all the cows and all the boys, fall down dead because the water has been poisoned by Kaliya. So chapter 16 describes how Krishna chastises Kaliya. And it is a wonderful chapter, and it is a very, interestingly enough, Sukadeva Goswami, he just says what happens right in the beginning of the chapter. He says what happens very, very briefly in a summary. And but then Maharaj Prakrit inquires further. And Sukadeva then tells the whole pastime in more detail. But why does he first explain in a summary? Our acharyas have explained that chapter is going to describe, the 16th chapter is going to describe how Krishna is caught within the coils of the Kaliya snake. And this was such a devastation for the residents of Vrindavan. If we just think about why it was a devastation for them, and understand why Sukadeva Goswami didn't want to, he was ready to go past this chapter and not explain it in detail to Maharaj Prakrit. This will give us an idea of the nature of what bhakti actually is. And it is very extreme, because he didn't want to describe this to Prithvi Maharaj, because for a devotee, when he conceives of, or he thinks of, meditates upon, or has to hear about, which is the cause of meditation, how Krishna is inconvenienced, or possibly at the time of, at a point of death for him, that's how the residents of Vrindavan were thinking, because he's caught by the snake. And naturally, one would think if one is caught by a snake and wrapped tightly in the coils of this huge and powerful and poisonous snake. Remember, the snake was so powerful with its poison that just by his presence in the Yamuna, all the cows and the boys had died. So he was so full of venom, and he was biting Krishna on the chest. So the residents of Vrindavan didn't think, oh, what a wonderful pastime that Krishna is performing. And they didn't think, oh, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Balaram actually thought that way. He thought, Krishna, there's no question of him being harmed by any ordinary serpent of this world. But the residents of Vrindavan, their love was so extreme that they could not conceive of Krishna in any kind of a difficult circumstance. It was unlimitedly painful for them, even though in fact there is no question of Krishna ever coming to harm. But the nature of their love, it would not allow that thought to enter their consciousness. This is the nature of their love. It was so extreme, and it describes in the 16th chapter, it describes Sukadev Satsang. Mm-hmm. There's a tiger out there or something? A small elephant? Or a duck? Duck causing trouble again. So it was impossible for them. Their love was so extreme, it completely covered up their understanding of Krishna's power. It's just, it overwhelmed, one could say, that's the easiest way to describe it. It overwhelmed their knowledge of Krishna's Aishwarya, because they had actually seen in the 11th chapter, not they had seen, the cowherd boys had seen, but all the other residents of Vrindavan had heard about how Krishna was attacked by Vatsasura. And then Krishna was attacked by, who was after Vatsasura? Is that his chapter? I don't remember. Bakasura in Kadirvan. So they had seen this, the cowherd boys had seen this. All the residents of Vrindavan had seen Krishna when he was just 3 months old, killing Putana, who was a gigantic witch. They had seen Krishna kill Trinavarta. They had seen Krishna kick the cart, demon Shakatasura. They had seen Krishna already, even by this time, exhibit some strength. But yet, the very nature of their bhakti, the nature of their love, it did not allow for them to conceive of Krishna's power, because their love forced them to think, oh, Krishna's going to be harmed by this snake. This is the nature of their bhakti. And when they saw, it describes how the cowherd boys, when they first saw Krishna caught by the snake, they fell down on the ground, just like trees who had been cut at the root. Just like if you just take a saw, chainsaw, just cut a tree, it has no more support. And it just topples over, there's nothing to hold it. So similarly, the residents of Vrindavan, they fell over physically on the ground, like a tree would fall over, its support having been cut. And what's their support? Their support is their relationship with Krishna. Krishna Matsa, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadhan, to the extreme for the residents of Vrindavan. They knew nothing but Krishna. Itam Satam Brahmasukhan Avitya Dasyam Katayam Paradayavitena Maya Sitanam Sitananam Narapangalena Sakyam Vicharu Krita Punja Punja. That they were the most extremely exalted persons. How many lifetimes of punya, of piety they had performed to come to this position of associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead so intimately, playing with Him, Sakyam, like a friend. Because when Krishna is playing in the forest of Braja, He is still, of course, unlimitedly powerful. He's omniscient. He knows everything. He knows everything in existence. He knows everything. He's unlimitedly powerful. He's unlimitedly beautiful. He's unlimitedly wealthy. He's unlimitedly renounced and unlimitedly famous. And yet, he's acting like a coward boy. But he doesn't lose any of his power when he does that. He's still unlimited. So, how much piety did these souls perform, or did they accumulate to be able to play with the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead? So, their love for Krishna was so extreme that, again, in the midst of their pastimes, it did not allow for them to think of Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because intimacy of love and intimacy of knowledge of Krishna's Aishwarya Shakti, His potencies, they're incompatible. Just as if there's an extremely wealthy man who is here, if we think of him in terms of his wealth, that will change the way that we deal with him. We cannot deal with him in great intimacy and just appreciate him and have affection for him if we are always aware of how wealthy he is, because we'll always be thinking of his power, his wealth, etc. So when love is extreme, it covers over knowledge of wealth, of power, of Krishna. But that doesn't mean that the wealth and the power and the fame and the beauty and the strength doesn't mean that they have diminished in any way. But it's just that the knowledge of it by the great devotees, it covers it. And even more wonderful, even more amazing, is that how does that Supreme Personality of Godhead react when to the love that the devotees have for Him in such a intense and personal way? And the answer to that is He completely reciprocates with them. He completely reciprocates with them in the mood of their love. So His consciousness, which is unlimited, His consciousness is unlimited. No one can understand Him. No jiva soul can understand Him. He explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. All we can do when we think, why does God do this and why does God do that? All we can do is, with our tiny brain, we can just think in terms of, if I was doing it, this would be how I would be thinking. But our consciousness is finite. It is so finite because we, each of us are individuals, and we each think in our individual way. And no one is conscious fully of what it's like being another person. No one is conscious fully of what the other person is experiencing. But Krishna, as the Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, as the Supreme Lord in everyone's heart, He is conscious of what everyone is thinking, all at the same time. It's like getting, for us, just imagine having a mobile phone and getting 6 billion calls all at one time. 6 billion more than that calls at one time, and having to and speaking, carrying on 6 billion conversations at the same time, and this is just with the human beings, and there are unlimited other living entities. So Krishna has, he's aware of what everyone is thinking and doing, and this is not at all a strain for him. What is the maximum number of SMSs you got in one day?
Two or three.
Nothing. You? Just imagine getting 6 billion SMSs in one day and everyone expecting an immediate reply. But Krishna has no problem doing this. And not only that, he does it with just a small amount of his energy. He's aware of everything. So Vasya Chaham Vidyasanavisto, he's aware of everything. Everything is coming from him. So how does he react when this fully focused, loving consciousness of the residents of Vrindavan interacts with him? And again, the answer is that the all-powerful, unlimitedly knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead fully reciprocates. And if they want to love him as a friend, as a cowherd boyfriend, he becomes, his consciousness, of course we can't understand what it's like, but it contracts in the sense of him forgetting everything else except how to deal with them and how to act in such a way that their ecstasy increases. So this is the great mystery of Vrindavan. And the great mystery of Vrindavan is unfathomable. What does unfathomable mean?
Incomprehensible?
Yeah, for the material mind, no one can understand it. Because all we can do with our minds is infer with our consciousness. In Sanskrit, the word is anuman. Is that we can infer. And Srila Prabhupada compared this to what? Trying to understand it. Yes, the frog in the well is the ocean 2 times as big as my well? Is the ocean 4 times as big as my well? No, it's larger than that. You mean it's 6 times as big as my well? No, you don't understand. It's so large. You mean it's 12 times as big as my well? So if we just keep adding up our tiny well-like consciousness, we can never understand what Krishna is like. But we can understand something by hearing the words of those who are deeply connected with Krishna. So, in one sense, we can never do anything to not only understand Vrindavan and the spiritual world, but we can never do anything, and I'll qualify this statement, to enter it. And to try to enter Vrindavan with our material faculties, material abilities, what is the term that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our Srila Prabhupada used to describe those who try to pierce Vrindavan with their material faculties? Sahajya, when you try to enter through the material mind, and rather the teachings of Srila Bhakti Sanatha Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and the great acharyas, was a completely different method. And the method was desiring to be there, and having no feeling oneself having no qualification to be there. And that, what is it when you feel you have no qualification? What is that called?
Mm-hmm.
Humility or danya. So therefore the danya, as Srila Sanatana Goswami describes in the Bhagavad Gita, is and prema are actually the same. And danya attracts Krishna's mercy, which gives prema. But not just danya in the sense of someone who feels himself incompetent, but one who has committed to the lotus feet of Krishna and Krishna's service and surrendering to Krishna's mercy. That is danya. That is humility. If one just thinks oneself either competent spiritually, that is one kind of illusion. And if one thinks oneself incompetent spiritually and just tries to, is always thinking about how incompetent I am, that is not danya either, because they're always thinking about themselves. But rather, danya means the fully taking shelter of Krishna's mercy. So the residents of Vrindavan, they were so exalted and perfected that their love was able to, in that sense, contract Krishna's consciousness so that he forgot everything except what he was doing when he was with them. So this is the nature of love, actually. This is the effect, the natural effect of love. But we don't usually think of it in terms of spiritual love or love of God, because this concept is so personal. And it took the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to reveal the ultimate limits of self-realization, when the self realizes person, the self realizes himself as Krishna and realizes Krishna as his own. Because everyone has, this is the meaning of absolute truth, the param satyam. Because there is a difference between the concept of param satyam, the absolute truth, and the concept of Ishvara. Because the usual conception of God that people have is Ishvara, or the controller. But the concept of the absolute truth is quite different from the concept of Ishvara, or controller. The concept of the controller of Ishvara has to do with a secondary characteristic of the Supreme Lord, his dealings in the material world. And what is his dealings in the material world? He's the creator, he's the controller, etc., of the material world. He's the regulator, he's the maintainer. He's the all-merciful, so many things like that. Great lawgiver in the material world. But the concept of the absolute truth, yes, it includes the material world, the concept of the material world and everything in relationship to the material world, but it's far greater. It's that which nothing is external to. That the absolute truth is that which everything emanates from. Everything comes from the absolute truth. There is nothing external to it. So this absolute truth, when dealing with the residents of Vrindavan, he reciprocates with such love that he forgets everything else. Again, this is natural. When one, even if one is a great world leader, a president or something, just carrying around the weight of all the responsibilities, oh, now it's time to make the sun rise, so now I have to make it, stars have to come out now, the moon has to turn around, this person has to get this karma, this person has to get this karma, is everything working right? So, of course, I'm being a little silly, but the idea of and everyone praying those 6 billion prayers that people, all the requests that the pious people of the world make of him when they go to all the temples and churches of the world and the mosques and everything, God.
6 billion.
Huh?
You probably have 6 billion pious people.
No, this is also in the past.
Okay.
But when the people are in danger very often, whether they're, everyone becomes pious very quickly. But he's conscious of all that, just like a great business executive is conscious of so many things when he's at the office, but when he gets home, he can just relax and enjoy with his family members. And if he's good at it, he forgets his hard day at work in the midst of the loving dealings of his family members. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he forgets everything else. His mind is so captivated by the love of his devotees that he forgets he becomes enchanted by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. So this, again, this concept of this, of the absolute truth in this personal, intimate way to the highest degree is a special gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when the time in the 16th chapter, when Krishna was held by Kaliya, and Sukadeva Goswami described it first in a summarized fashion, because and here's the point I initially started with, that because it would be painful for Maharaj Prakrit to hear that Krishna was in such a dangerous position, because Maharaj Prakrit was such a great devotee of Krishna, and it was so close to the time of his death. So it would have been so painful for him. So this gives us a glimpse of how a devotee, a real devotee, of what his consciousness is like. For him, Krishna is real. And he's willing to sacrifice without a second's hesitation the unreal material world to gain the real. To use the unreal as a stepping stone to the real without a moment's hesitation is the consciousness of great devotees. We see this in so many great devotees. We saw it in Maharaj Prakrit himself, who, when he was cursed, he was the king, and he was cursed to die, and he didn't complain, he didn't write his MP, he didn't use his influence, he didn't try to bribe Yamaraj. He just surrendered because he saw it as an opportunity to step from this world into the real world. Such depth of realization is very rare. So Maharaj Prakrit did ask Sukadeva Goswami about this pastime, and he described it. And of course we know how Krishna, after seeing the resident, he stayed wrapped in the coils of Kaliya for one muhurta. How long is one muhurta? I don't remember.
4 hours.
48 minutes. A muhurta. So for 48 minutes, Krishna was coiled within me. So this like a serpent's body is like a muscle. It's one of the muscle, and it's very, very powerful. And he was holding Krishna, trying to squeeze him and kill him. And then Krishna saw that the residents of Vrindavan weren't in so much distress, but they were all staring at him. They were in anxiety, but they were staring at him. This was the first time that all the residents of Vrindavan could just stare at Krishna. And what was another time was that they could all stare at Krishna. That came later. What time was that?
Godavila.
Yes, but this is the first time. And they just stared at Krishna after. And then when Krishna started dancing, he freed himself by expanding himself. After one muhurta, he started dancing upon the hoods of Kaliya in a very special way. And he turned it into a great dramatic performance, actually. A dancing performance. And the devatas, they were playing musical instruments as Krishna was dancing upon and kicking at the same time the heads of Kaliya one after another. He was doing more than one thing at one time. So this pastime ended. Kaliya was banished. Then in the next chapter, 17th chapter, because we're going to hear something from chapter 18. In the 17th chapter, the story of how Kaliya came to the lake within the Yamuna is told. And it had to do with one muni named Sobari Muni. And his ashram, where he stayed at the Yamuna, is in one village just outside of Vrindavan, and that village is known as Sandrak. Yeah, he stayed there. There's a temple where he stayed. And Sandrak is famous all over Vrindavan as being a town of thieves. You know, it's true.
It's not very far the way past Madhavan.
It's only a 10-minute walk, 10, 12-minute walk from when you make a left turn on the Pukram Road. You should walk up so fast. So then, after in the 17th chapter, then the cowherd, everyone was so tired because they were in so much anxiety after watching Krishna. It wasn't like watching some video or something like that. They were fully involved because Krishna was everything for them. Again, their love was, it was so incredible and so intense. So they decided to spend the night. So they went to sleep early, and they milked the cows. You know why they milked the cows? Where are you from?
Nepal.
They have cows in Nepal, yes?
Yeah.
Why do you milk the cows in the evening? Are you from Kathmandu?
Yeah.
Then we won't ask you. And they have cows in Kathmandu?
Yeah, there are.
Okay, why do they milk the cows in the evening?
Probably to offer for God.
For what?
Is it to offer for God?
But why do you milk a cow? How many times a day do you milk a cow?
Twice.
Yes, once in the morning, once. And what happens if you don't milk the cow?
She will suffer.
The cow will become ill.
Yeah, yeah,
so they have to do it.
Yeah.
They have to milk the cows. But they wouldn't drink the milk because they thought that the cows might be poisoned, because everything in that area was poisoned. They didn't drink the milk. And they went to take rest. And then some people say that some of the spies of King Kamsa set a forest fire. So the whole area where they were staying, all the cowherd men, all the cows, all the boys, all the cowherd girls, all of Vrindavan was there practically. The whole village of Vrindavan had come to see Krishna because there had been signs that that there was Krishna might be in danger. So everyone had come there to see. Why did they come? Why did they go there when they thought Krishna might be in danger? Yeah, it's just natural. You can't tell your feet no, and your feet won't listen to you. Your feet demand to go and see when there is love. So they all ran there and they all had to watch Krishna. And the only thing that kept Mother Yasoda from jumping in the water to rescue Krishna, the poisonous water, was that she fainted. The only thing that kept her alive was all the her friends were telling her about the pastimes of Krishna, and by pouring the sweet nectar of Krishna's pastimes into her ear, she somehow stayed alive. And the only thing that kept the coward men from jumping into the Yamuna was Balaram. And Balaram did that in a few ways. One way, he forcibly manifested two arms on this side, and he forcibly kept people away. And another way, he was smiling. And the residents of Vrindavan thought, if Balaram is smiling, he loves Krishna as much as we love Krishna, and he's not worried, so he's saying, don't worry, for us not to worry, so therefore, he loves Krishna more than anyone. Krishna and Balaram were inseparable. They were always together.
You mean he manifested another two arms?
Yeah, sometimes.
It's two and two.
Two and two.
Two and two.
Four. Mm. But for Balaram, that's not difficult. He can manifest thousands and millions of arms.
But I didn't notice that he had four arms. They didn't like, wow, look, he had four arms.
They said, wow, look, he's smiling. That's all they noticed. Mm-hmm. How is it that Balaram is smiling when Krishna is in difficulty and he's telling us, don't worry. So he loves Krishna so much. So therefore, we should not worry so much. And actually, Krishna knew that Balaram, and then when Krishna came out of the water, unhurt, and Balaram embraced him, everyone said, yes, Balaram was right, there was no actual cause of worry. And then later on, in the 28th chapter of the 10th canto, when Nanda Maharaj is taken under the water by, not Varuna, but the servants of Varuna. And Krishna jumped in to bring back Nanda Maharaj, he told Balaram, you go to Mother Yasoda and tell her that everything's going to be alright. Because Nanda Maharaj had jumped into the water and disappeared, and now Krishna was going to jump into the water and disappear. And Krishna knew that if Mother Yasoda saw or heard that Krishna had jumped into the water and disappeared, it would have been all over. She would have died. But Krishna also knew that Balaram, because of what happened at the Yamuna on the day of Kaliya, his credibility, that don't worry, Krishna is going to be okay. Everyone trusted Balaram, especially after that. So Krishna told Balaram to tell Mother Yasoda personally that everything's going to be alright. Everything's going to be alright. But at the same time, as described in Ananda Vrindavan Sambhu, when Srimati Radharani heard that Krishna had jumped into the water, she fainted in such a way that she was going to die. And what kept her alive, do you know what kept her alive? Is that her friends, who were very intelligent, they told her, look, Krishna's here. He didn't jump in the water, he's right here. They told a lie.
Many times.
Again and again. Just to keep her
a life, a life for a life.
Then you went to tell a lie.
Yes, because the highest truth is to act in such a way that Krishna is pleased. That is true. And of course, in Srimati Radharani's separation from Krishna, Krishna is there. So in any case, in the 17th chapter, a great forest fire was begun. And again, some say that it was started by the servants of Kamsa. And when that forest fire had begun, everyone was in a dangerous position. Why? Because there was a forest fire. And when they were in a dangerous position, their minds only knew one thing to do, and that was to call out to Krishna. And I can see this with my materialistic mind as opposed to a spiritual mind like they have. When there's danger, the last thing the mind wants to do, the materialistic mind wants to do, is to call out to Krishna for help. Rather, what does it take shelter of instead of Krishna?
Triple zero.
Take shelter of what?
Triple zero.
What is that?
Zero.
What is that? Nothing.
Telephone call.
Oh, yeah.
US 9/11.
No, I think 8/11 or something. 000. Or what do people do when they're in some kind of danger?
Call out their loved ones.
Yeah. Sometimes they, when they're disturbed, they take some intoxicants, or some go to the movies, or some go shopping, or some. People find so many ways, depending on the modes of nature, that affect them. They find so many things to do other than take shelter of Krishna. They check to make sure they have their credit cards. They make sure they have enough petrol in their car. But the residents of Vrindavan didn't do any of those things. Nor did they go surfing on the internet. What they did do was call out to Krishna. Not one of them and not one time. But they had no other shelter other than Krishna. So they would call out, Krishna, Krishna. There was a great forest fire coming. And forest fire fills the consciousness with terror. Because there's nowhere to go. And it's dangerous. And the discomfort is increasing continuously. So they called out, Krishna, 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 Krishna. And Krishna said, he didn't say anything actually, but he just swallowed up the forest fire as if it was a cooling drink. And the forest fire was gone. And there's a wonderful description how they rested there during the night, and then they all returned to Braja, to the town of to where they were staying the next morning. But then, in the 18th chapter, which is the one I wanted to read, and we'll maybe read a little of, 18th chapter is about, it's called The Killing of Pralambasura. Because the cowherd boys and Krishna, this is more of the cowherd pastimes of Krishna. The cowherd boys and Krishna, they were in a forest and they were playing and they were enjoying so much. And they, again, they so much love to be with Krishna, and Krishna, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he loved to be with them. They were playing. And what forest were they in?
Bandirava.
Bandirava. You have seen?
Yes.
You have seen? You have seen? You have seen? You've been to Bandiravan? What do you think of Bandiravan?
This place nearby where Andhra Maharaj performed.
That's Madhuvan, though. Madhuvan, I know what you think of. You think it is sweet. Sweet as honey. And it is. But Bandiravan is also sweet. But it is not Madhuvan. Have you been to Bandiravan or just Madhuvan?
I've been, but I can't recall it.
Oh, okay. Have you been to? You've been to Pokhara?
Yeah.
Okay. You've been to Bandiravan? You? Yes? It's a very nice place. Very nice place. There is a tree there. I went there with Lidham 2 years ago. Have you heard from Lidham, by the way? Is he improving?
Maybe 20% improving.
Oh. From doing yoga and things? He was suffering. It's a great tree, and at one time this tree used to go across to the other side of the Yamuna. And the branches, it was so huge, so big, and the Yamuna at that time was filled with lotus flowers, and it was so beautiful, and there was great fragrance, and there was no pollution coming from Delhi. Are you from Nepal also?
No.
Where are you from?
Indore.
Have you seen what's that place? Gita Bhavan or something? Indore?
Yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah.
Prabhupada went there.
Yeah.
And Indore is near Ujjain.
Yeah. I've been to Ujjain as well.
Lucky. Krishna also went to Ujjain. Yeah. And also there was a Brahmin. Yeah. And there was also a Brahmin that's described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam who was from there too. Do you know that's past time?
Mm-hmm.
No. But they were playing, the cowherd boys were playing. It was beginning of 18. After extinguishing the devastating fire, actually the last chapter, we were saying there's a forest fire, and they were all praying to Krishna. Such nice prayers. Oh dear Krishna, oh Supreme Personality of Godhead, oh dear Balaram, the reservoir of all strength. Please try to save us from this all-devouring and devastating fire. We have no shelter other than you. This devastating fire will swallow us all. We have no shelter other than you. That's the residence of Vrindavan. They had no shelter other than Krishna. Thus they prayed to Krishna, saying they could not take any shelter other than at his lotus feet. Lord Krishna, being compassionate upon his own townspeople, he immediately swallowed up the whole forest fire and saved them. This was not impossible for Krishna, because he's unlimited. He has unlimited power to do anything he desires. So what does that make you think? He has unlimited power. This was not difficult for Krishna. Not only wasn't it impossible for Krishna, it's not even difficult for Krishna. Why? Because he's unlimited. And he can do anything that he desires. Because there's no meaning to him being God or the concept of God if he's limited. And there's no meaning to him being God unless he's swatantra, independent, which means he can do whatever he desires. So he's unlimited and he can do anything he desires. So what does that make you think?
I can't learn Krishna with my mind and intelligence.
Yeah. Indeed. What else?
Explain the meaning to the definition of God.
Very good. What else? Yeah. He can do anything he desires. Then the question becomes, how can I get him to desire? Because this is why most people go to a church and a temple. Oh, they think, oh, he's God, that means he's unlimited, he can do anything he desires. So first I'll do is I'll go in and offer him some prayers or a few coins, and then I'll give him my list of all the things I desire.
And he can do anything I desire.
Well, if I can make, I hope he'll do what I desire. It's there, but how to get him to do what I want? How to get his desire to be my desire? And the great devotees think the other way around. How to get my desire to be his desire? Mm-hmm. Instead of getting me to serve, him to serve me, which is the way I usually think, but how to get me to serve him? How to harmonize my consciousness with his consciousness, as opposed to how to harmonize his consciousness with my consciousness. And then if we talk like that, how can I get to serve him and harmonize my desires with his desires? Then no one is interested, because people are interested in very little things. And therefore they are called alpamedasa. Little intelligence. But the person who's a mahatma, who has broad intelligence, he wants to, he sees things in the proper perspective. Udharadi. He's big-brained. So he thinks, sees things in the proper perspective, and he wants to harmonize, change his consciousness to Krishna consciousness, wants to awaken his relationship with Krishna, knowing that Krishna is all-powerful and I'm tiny and insignificant. So although I can't do anything to please Krishna really, but Krishna accepts, what's he called, bhava grahi janardana. He accepts the essence of one's mood when one does service. Bhava grahi janardana. So that's like there's that pastime in the Ramayana that's described in Yudhya Kanda, where Hanuman and the great Vanara warrior monkeys were throwing great boulders and rocks and trees into the ocean so that the bridge could be built, so that the monkeys could cross over the bridge and Ram could cross over the bridge and destroy rascal Ravana and his kingdom so that Sita could be recovered. And when Hanuman was throwing great boulders in, there was a little
spider
or Gilhari, they call it in Yogi. Well, you know what is Gilhari? Gilhari, that's what they call it in Vrindavan. You know? They have the same in Madhya Pradesh.
Gilhari.
Yes, what does Gilhari mean?
It's like
Did you ever see one?
Yeah.
What does it look like? How big is it?
It's this one.
Yeah, and how much of that is tail?
1 foot or 1/3 of our length.
Okay, and then what does it look like, the rest? So that, you know what a Gilhari is? What is it?
Squirrel.
It's like a squirrel. With the three, they say the three stripes. They have those in Nepal too?
I think so. But we don't say Gilhari.
What do you call them?
Is it this exactly squirrel?
Yes.
Yeah, called
Musha. Oh, very nice sound. And they have little stripes on the back, and they say that's from Lord Ram's petting. So the little Gilhari, Musha, he was, we also say spider sometimes. I mean, nothing trying to insult the Gilhari, but he was just tossing little things, little grains of sand, just to help. And how
it feels auspicious if they cross your way in MP. Like if you're going somewhere and if it crosses your way, it's considered very auspicious.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And if you're driving a car and they cross in front of it, auspicious for you, but maybe not auspicious for Gilhari. So Hanuman, or some of the monkeys, said, "Get out of the way! We'll step on you. What is this throwing of grains of sand?" And Lord Ram said, "No. His service is equal to yours. I appreciate them the same because of Baba Grahid and all that." Okay, we'll stop. And tomorrow we shall jump right into chapter 18. Anyone have any question?
You talked about the idea of serving the way you want to serve, and how Krishna will reciprocate with that. And then later on you talked about sahajiyas, when one approaches kind of using his own mind and intelligence to try to understand.
To enter in.
Yeah.
Not to understand.
So, yes. So how do you reconcile the two principles of the sahajiya who sort of like concocts his way of...
Well, there it is. There's the word.
Yeah.
Concoct. Yeah. He's not following the acharyas.
But wouldn't they, the person who's serving in the way they want to serve, have an element of self-creating? Imagination in there.
Inspiration, but it has to be in line with it's an offering. I think what you're talking about is someone wants to make an offering. And the other, the sahajiya, is trying to enter into the spiritual world using, thinking that they can do that with their mental constructs and to bring something material into the spiritual realm, like the Saki Vekis, etc., dressing up the material body, something like that.
Sometimes Prabhupada says that, in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think, that at least they're sort of trying or something.
No.
He talks about the when you chant Hare Krishna, he's like the Radha Sham.
Yes, you know, the same said that. Because they're chanting the name of Nitya and Gaur, that will give them a future hope.
Oh, that's right.
So there's some benefit. So there's some benefit, but you can't enter in by your own power. It's really only by the power of how to. So therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mood was active in such a way that Krishna will see you. You'll be seen by your spider or Gilhari like attempt to do something to help. And the distance between my ability to enter and and the actual goal is very, very great. But here is my spider-like, Gilahari-like attempt to do something.
When you recognize the distance between it produces humility.
But you're fixed in the goal and you're taking shelter of Krishna, that's humility. That's kindness. Okay. So tomorrow we shall try again. The new table is.
Hmm.
Where did it come from? India. How did it get here?
From Guildford.
Yeah?
Mm.
How did it get to Guildford?
Yeah, I got from India to Guildford and then I came from Guildford to here. There's a series of them. Seven of them are
here. There's what?
There's one inside another. There's 21.
Yeah?
I haven't met yet.
You have them also?
Three.
Smaller ones? Or big ones?
You can see the whole family.
Very good.
And we discovered, you know, traveling.
To Guildford?
Yeah, because there's a prison for Parishan Valley. And
how did you get here all the way from Nepal?